society when you don't even judge your government, who is today offing people in the world, murdering people. Today you judge this homeless man who sits there peacefully, not hurting anybody, and you do not judge the police who run around America beating black people over the heads daily. I said, maybe your values have been distorted by this country that you live in. And he looked at me and he was a little bit angered, but I think I also maybe made some points with him. I walked away, he walked away. I don't know how much good I did, but I think that we do have to confront each other. I believe that if we don't confront each other, then we allow each other to be selfish and unjust. If you're in a house and you see that someone in that house is causing pain to another person in the house, it is your right, and I believe your obligation. That's when people call me a preacher, but it's because I care about the human race that I say that we have an obligation to confront anybody, anywhere, anytime, who is perpetrating misery and suffering for their own self-interest. We must confront them. And ultimately, we must empower ourselves as people to get to the level where we can actually not only confront them verbally, but confront them to the degree where we will be able to stop them and render them impotent. And when I mean them, let's be clear about them. When I mean them, I mean not all those peoples who are the working class, not all those peoples who are oppressed, not all the black people, not all the indigenous people. I'm talking specifically about those rulers who are in the world today, who own and control the military, who own and control the police, who own and control the majority of the world's resources, who have systematically colonized the geographical territory of the earth and therefore enslaved the people in those geographical territories. I'm talking about those small minority of people who live behind closed doors, who we do not get to see very often. In fact, some of their faces are hidden from us so that we cannot see them at all. But we know they exist, and we know largely who they are today. Maybe not all of them, but we know a lot of who they are because we have done enough studying and research to see and find out who they are. We can pinpoint them today. The corporate owners, the Pentagon rulers, the rulers of the Washington, D.C., the rulers of Britain, the rulers of France, the rulers of Germany, the rulers of Japan. In fact, there is three countries in the world today who are the most major economic and political powers in the world today that are controlling and huge amounts of resources, and they're actually competing like huge, big sharks over who's going to swallow up the guppies in the world. They are Germany, Japan, and America. These three countries are the biggest economic, political, and military powers of the world today. Japan is largely colonizing and enslaving, or has enslaved and continuing its slavery of huge sections of Asia. Germany leading the way for the rest of Europe and Africa. America being the big slave master of the Western Hemisphere. So these three countries, what Noam Chomsky refers to as a tripolar situation, these three countries are dominating the world and its people. It's amazing that a very small minority of people throughout the last 500 years have been able to accumulate the type of power that they yield today in the world, where they have the power and the capability to destroy the entire human race within a very small time because of the nuclear bomb technology. And do not think that these people will not use them, because they have shown us historically in Japan. In fact, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they showed us that they will use the atomic bomb, they will drop them, and they will declare to the world that they are our masters. We must do away with all slavery, all masters. Those masters who can be talked with and will turn their hearts and come to the side of the people, fine. That's the ideal way. But those masters who we talk with and will not come, then we will have to off them. That's a really intense concept, and many people fear that concept. But what I'm saying to you is that when you're dealing with a Nazi Germany, and that's what we're finding ourselves in America today, when you're dealing with where rulers are systematically planning great amounts of travesty and great amounts of suffering, genocide, when you're dealing with rulers who are willing to do that to the people and are doing that to the people, planning for it, organizing it, mobilizing to do that, then your chance for survival is self-defense. If you're not willing to defend yourself, then you will die. You will be killed. And that's what's happening in the world today. Now I take it a step further from self-defense. I say that it is self-defense in the interest of the human race to make revolution. Revolution is a concept that means that the oppressed people rise up in unity and solidarity with the understanding of how to liberate the world, and with the understanding that the oppressors of the world must be confronted, must be defeated, must be rendered impotent. Those oppressors who we can confront verbally and they will change, fine. That is a wonderful thing. But those oppressors who show us that they will fight to the bitter end, we must fight them. If we do not, they will remove us from the planet. That is an intense concept to deal with, but yet we must. If we do not deal with that concept, then we are only contributing to our very oppression. Today, oh, my time is almost up. Actually, it is up, so I'll be off the air in a minute.
You bet you will.
Robert Norris just stepped in, and he was about to jump on the radio, so he will be here in just 1 second. I will be on next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock to 9:30. I encourage anybody out there to please call in during those times to have the debate and the discussion about how can we solve the world and rid the world of its problems. All the problems, the alcoholism, the drug addictions, the drug war, the prison system, the homelessness, the famine, the starvations, the rapes, the domination of women, the 500 years of oppression and colonization of black people as a people. Mayor Mike Rodkin, Robert Norris threw in. There's a lot of serious problems that I know many of you are aware of and many more of us are becoming aware of. That's part of the solution, is getting informed, getting aware. An informed and aware people can do anything in the world. And ignorant people are subject to being hurt. Because there are people in this world who will take advantage of you because of your ignorance, and they are doing that to us right now. In fact, we live in a country that's basically a machine of ignorance. The way that the corporations, the media, the ruling class operates, and the way the system of institutions of racism and sexism and ignorance operate in this country, we can come out from the school systems, the highest academia in the land, and yet, check this out, you can have a PhD and not know the world you live in. You can have a master's degree and not even understand the last 500 years of history. You can come out so-called educated in America and not have a fucking clue to what the ruling class is truly about. That is a damned shame and disgrace. But it demonstrates the point that the institutions of education, so-called education in this country, are not about educating the people about the reality of the world and how to rid the world of its problems. They are specifically about how to perpetrate and perpetuate the machine to continue to go on and on. I must go because I'll have a big mouth and long-winded. I could go on for a long time. So I'll leave. I hope everybody does well. I hope everybody has a good weekend. I love you all. Please get involved in the struggle if you're not already. If you are in the struggle, please find a way to struggle harder and further. And I myself am willing to talk with anybody, anytime, about different things. I'm planning with other people to organize a revolutionary coalition in the Santa Cruz community at this time. We're looking for people who are serious and determined, who want to read and research and discuss and debate and take forth and take part in the political effective action that will build and contribute to the movement and developing in this country. So if you would be interested in doing that, my home phone is 421-9250. Call at any time. And we'll talk with you soon. Love you all. Take care. Robert Norris is on his way.
Hey. It's Just Man Jim Costner signing off, and raspy bathrobes peer Robert Norris signing on. You're going to be with me, I hope, for 2 hours, and my cranky voice with the bathrobes peer's broadsides, which is, as you probably have already heard 1,000 times, but maybe not, civil rights. Civil rights here, civil rights there, mostly civil rights here. Mostly civil rights for the poor. We're going to have an interview with Pebbles Trippett, marijuana activist, recently sentenced in Martinez. This is a woman who carries joints with her to every court appearance she goes to. She said she would not be without her medicine. We're also going to have a long and very illuminating interview with Keith McHenry, San Francisco Food Not Bombs activist, whom you've heard on these airwaves before. He sums up some very interesting developments in San Francisco, plans to relocate the homeless to Treasure Island. Hey, I got the word yesterday from researcher Al, who's been hot on that story. Hopefully he'll call in with an update. We've got lots of stuff. Much of it is going to be recorded because I got the sniffles, and I just don't want to drool all over you here. And that's what I'd be doing if I talk too much, plus I get considerably sicker. You can have that. Yeah, we have Just Man Jim is leaving, and I want to point out to anyone who's interested, we do have copies, back copies of the Commemorator, which is kind of the Black Panther Party paper successor. Black Panther Party is kind of now more of a historical note than anything else. Thank you, Jim. Jim, again, is taking off, and do give Jim a call at his number if you want to help be part of a coalition. Jim's been doing work in the community at least for the last 2 years that I know of, all the way from the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty, when he walked right into Bookshop Santa Cruz, Neil Coonerty's terrain. That's the council member and former mayor who helped pass the anti-homeless laws and is now making a name for himself as a big-time liberal who opposes Rush Limbaugh, Well, being against Rush Limbaugh in Santa Cruz is not a difficult thing. Being in favor of homeless rights and fighting to get through a city council that is riddled with complacency and cowardice and corruption, you might even say, in a certain sense. I don't know what you call it. Cronyism is better than corruption. I don't want to make corruption charges without evidence. Hey, I was going to give you a theme song. Here's a theme song. It's Daryl Cherney singing a song about a woman named Judy Berry.
Now Judy Berry is a wobbly organizer, a Mother Jones at the Georgia Pacific Mill. She fought for the sawmill workers hit by that PCB spill. G. Marshall Hunt's calling GP shots from Atlanta. Don Nelson sold in the Union long ago. Now they weren't gonna have no wobbly running their logging show. So they spewed out their hatred and they laid out their scam. Jerry Philbrick called for violence, was no secret what they planned. So I ask him, who bombed Judy Berry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body or the spirit you can't kill? Now Judy Berry is a feminist organizer. Ain't no man gonna keep that woman down. She defended the abortion clinic in fascist Ukiah town. Calvary Baptist Church called for its masses. Camel buddies lined up in the pews. Now you can see all of their faces in the Ukiah Daily News. And they spewed out their hatred as Reverend Royals laid out the scam. Bill Staley called for violence, was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Berry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen your broken body or the spirit you can't kill? Judy Berry is an Earth First organizer. The California Redwoods are her home. Now she calls for Redwood Summer, where the owl and the black bear roam. Charlie Hurwitz, he runs Max AM out of Houston. Harry Merlot runs LP from Portland Town. They're the men they call King Timber. They know how to cut you down. And Shep Tucker spewed their hatred as Candy Boak laid out their scam. John Campbell called for violence, was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Berry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body or the spirit you can't kill? Now Judy Berry is the mother of two children. A pipe bomb went a-ripping through her womb. cries in pain at night time in a Willet's cabin room. FBI is back again with COINTELPRO. Richard Held is the man they know they trust, with Lieutenant Sims his henchman. It's a world of boom and bust, but we'll answer with nonviolence, for seeking justice is our plan. And we'll avenge our wounded comrades as we defend the ravaged land. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Barry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill? Or the spirit you can't kill.
And that was Who Killed Judy Barry, a Daryl Cherney song from the album Timber. A really good song. We got more of Cherney's stuff coming up later in the show. But right now on the line, we have the perennial street pest, that man who cannot seem to leave the police alone, previously known as Copwatch Bob. No, it's Skidmarks Bob of Just Kidding Band. I don't know if you're kidding this morning, Bob.
Actually, no, I'm not kidding. I got some interesting news. I don't know how many people know this or not, but the Sheriff's Department has been working in the Beach Flats area. I had the pleasure of meeting Sergeant Robert Pursley. Mm-hmm. There was an incident. What caught my attention is on Barson Street, there were two undercover type cars, but they had lights in the back and everything. And then there were two patrol officer cars. And then, of course, Sergeant Henning, our friend, was there. And so it caught my attention. So I decided to walk and see what was going on. And
that's
then they,
Horse Stroker Hennig we're talking about?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all left, and they went over, let's see, down Riverside Avenue, over the into the Beach Flats area, over the bridge. And then they ended up with this parking lot off of 3rd Street, and there's like four patrol cars there, plus the two undercover cars. And I thought that was interesting. So I sat there and watched them. I figured they might be doing a raid or something. So me being the concerned citizen, I wanted to see, you know, observe my police officers in action.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, one by one, left, and then they went down near the Beach Flats Park, where a lot of drug dealing does happen.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to the Beach Flats Park, and there were a lot of Latino men standing out in front of this one apartment complex. And then two uniform officers pulled up and started riding drinking in public tickets. Well, everybody drinks in public down there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Latino people hang out, and, you know, people drink outside. Anyway, the officers are writing them tickets, and they're actually looking for somebody. So I walk up on the scene, and I'm seeing what's going on. And
tape recording, I take it, as we go.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I tape some of it, some of the interaction there between the officers. And
your show will be on what? What time?
Sunday.
At what time?
But basically what happened, the sheriffs come up, and
uh-huh.
these two huge guys, huge, man, disgruntled football player guys.
Sheriff's
gang unit is down in the Beach Flats. They come up, and they're like, take control of everything. They're talking to the guys and saying they're looking for a certain person and this and that. So I walk up to the guy, Sergeant Pursley, and I said, oh, you guys are in town here. He says, oh, yeah. You know, we get to go anywhere. We're the sheriff's department. I go, oh, interesting. So I walk over and to the side, and then later he comes walking up to me, and he says, where do you live? And I said, over there. And he says, where's over there? And I said, in the Beach Flats area. He says, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm a concerned citizen, and I'm a journalist. And he says, well, I'm going to have to ask you to stop your tape recorder. And I said, why? He says, because you could be violating their rights over there. And I said, I'm not over there. And he says, well, I'm going to have to tell you to stop recording. And he basically forced me to stop recording.
And who was this who did this?
Sergeant Pursley of the Sheriff's Department.
He sounds as bad as Paul Lee of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
So anyway, he made me stop.
I wonder
and
if
then
they're brothers.
He made me give him my ID. I had nothing to hide. I gave him my ID. He didn't charge me with anything. He wrote my name down and everything. And then he asked me what I did journalism for. And I said, he asked me for a press pass. And his words to me were, if I didn't have a press pass, I did not belong recording in that area where he patrols. Basically, I could not record anything where he patrols without a press pass in his area.
Sergeant Pursley, maybe we should call Sergeant Pursley and ask him if all citizens with tape recorders are to be rounded up and, shall we say, cautioned about their need to get press passes before they turn on their tape recorders.
Well, the interesting thing is the city cops were there, and they were like, it's no big deal, because they knew me. You mm-hmm. know, I knew the one guy. He asked me how my kid was and everything and how the band's going. And he said, yeah, he's okay. Leave him alone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant, not Sergeant, but I forget it. Haley? Officer Haley.
Officer Haley, yeah.
And, you know, he was there, and he knows me, and it wasn't a big deal. He knows, he says, he records this all the time. So, I don't know, it was very kind of a mind-bending, kind of a, I got shook up after that, you know, because then the next time I go down there, he's going to be looking around for me.
Well, I suggest you file a complaint today with the Internal Affairs of the Sheriff's Department, though I should mention that I've done that in the past, and they never get out of that department unless you make something of a ruckus. So maybe you should file a complaint, and we should do a small demonstration with tape recorders at the sheriff's office.
Well, we'll see. I can understand the violating the rights of the person that's there. And he also said he could subpoena my tape, and that's why he wanted my ID. And that was the whole reason behind that. I'm surprised they didn't. I felt like I was going to jail.
You can't subpoena your tape if you're a journalist. That's not so.
Well, that's what he said
he could
do.
So. No, that's a privilege. And you work for a radio station. He's whistling Dixie in the dark.
Yeah, I know.
You should call Ed Fry, the famous attorney at law, and see what that man has to say.
Yeah, well, I'll be airing the conversation I had with Sergeant Pursley on Sunday evening.
I mean, you recorded him anyway?
Yeah, I did. Well, he told
you
me
scoundrel.
I recorded him for a while mm-hmm. until he told me actually to physically turn it off. And I did
mm-hmm.
because I thought he was going to take me away. You know.
Well, yeah. Next time you want to go down there, just have me along, and he can take one of us away, and the other one can take
yeah,
us.
Yeah, he'll help things out there.
And I hope so.
Okay, Robert.
Well, thank you, Cop Watch Bob.
Okay.
Keep it up.
Have a good show.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And that, of course, is Bob following a long tradition of exercising citizen vigilance in order to stop the kinds of abuses that Sergeant Pursley is apparently perpetrating on the public, which is trying to engage in his own drug war using his own idea of what ordinary citizens' rights are, which apparently is a rather inappropriate idea and a rather restricted idea. And the only way that stops is when citizens say no to it, and they have to say no together, or they get picked off one by one or intimidated. Bob is not a man easily intimidated. It sounds like Pursley intimidated him, and I can understand that. I've been intimidated, too, in those kinds of circumstances. It's sometimes kind of cold and mean out there, particularly when you're standing around where half the people don't know the language that you speak and you don't know the language they speak, and the other half is speaking the language of violence, guns, radios, and force. The police in their pursuit of drugs, illegal drugs. Speaking about illegal drugs, we have a heroine today who I'm going to play you an interview with, I mentioned earlier. Her name is Pebbles Trippett. And Pebbles Trippett has been an activist for the last couple decades around marijuana, the right to smoke it recreationally, the right to use it as hemp and other protein sources, the right to use it medicinally, which is, of course, been affirmed by the people of Santa Cruz County and various other counties, indeed by both houses of the state legislature. The only people objecting to this are Governor Pete Elect Me for President Wilson, who failed in his bid to do that, but didn't fail in his bid to make it criminal for us to use marijuana medicinally for the purposes that it does well. It helps people with all kinds of problems, as those of you listening probably know. And Pebbles
was picked up with 2 pounds of leaf, and she's been fighting charges for medical marijuana, as I said, for the last 5 or 6 years, and doing this kind of act. No, it's been longer than that. I first ran into her at a publication called Joint Effort News, which was, pun intended, a publication that was concerned with the rights of people who were using marijuana. And that was with her co-editor, Stony Burke, in San Francisco in 1982. They busted Burke and Pebbles, sent her to jail for, I think, a couple years for possession of LSD. She doesn't stop, though, and I'm going to let you hear from her personally. If you have any thoughts on the tape, we can interrupt it, and you can call in. Your call-in number here is 427-3772. You are listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, the micro-broadcasting station for Santa Cruz. Again, the number to call in if you want to join this dialogue on civil rights for the poor, and the drug war very much concerns the poor, because you just heard Bob Duran tell you the pretext that the police were using to jack up all these people was drinking alcohol in public, not being drunk, not causing trouble, not being abusive, violent, or damaging property, but drinking in public. So drugs are the hook that police are using to control the streets, to intimidate the population, and to make whatever choices they want in singling out people and punishing them for behavior the police think is inappropriate. That's what we call a police state. And that's what the drug war leads to. And here's Pebbles Trippett, and here's an interview with her from earlier this week.
I'm on the line with Pebbles Trippett, a marijuana activist, health activist, you might say, who knows, civil rights activist, in San Francisco. Is that where you are now?
Yes.
And Pebbles, I'm looking at a flyer which you gave me, oh gosh, 2 years ago, which invited people to come to medical marijuana on trial May 19th, 1994, at the Marin County Courthouse at 9 a.m. You remember that one?
Yes, I do.
And this flyer is a photo of you with a few joints in your hand. The headline from the Marin Independent Journal says, "Woman twice busted in Marin challenges marijuana laws." And notes that you were facing 6 months in jail for possession of 1.5 ounces and representing yourself using a medical necessity for marijuana defense. I don't know if we should go back that far, but you have another case pending now. Well, where do you want to start with all this?
Well, it's all the same, really. Each county seems to want to adopt me as its latest, witch.
Mm-hmm.
And this county is tougher. Contra Costa County is tougher.
Mm-hmm.
They pride themselves on that. But the constitutionality challenge that I'm presenting is identical,
mm-hmm.
Which is that the laws are unconstitutionally cruel, unreasonable, or irrational,
mm-hmm.
and unequal. That's cruel punishment. That's unreasonable searches and seizures of medicine,
mm-hmm.
and unequal protection compared to other drugs,
mm-hmm.
both prescription and Marinol, for instance,
mm-hmm.
which is the synthetic THC that marijuana derives from,
mm-hmm.
and yet they outlaw the plant that makes them, allows them to know that it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no confidence in suppressing the evidence. My confidence lies in bringing out the evidence in this decades-long war on drugs.
Well, let's start with the current case, and then maybe we can work back a little bit. What are you charged with? When's this all going to happen? And
okay, my sentencing is today,
mm-hmm.
at 4 p.m. in Martinez in Department 13.
This is a state court?
County Superior Court.
Uh-huh.
State laws.
Uh-huh.
And this...
Before Judge...
Judge Patsy.
Mm-hmm. Only in this case, you may be the patsy.
Well, I'm concerned that he's trying to make me one, but as a result of all this support that's come forth, I feel much less vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
The appeal issue is what surfaced as the critical factor. Not what I had thought, which was the restoring prescription access.
Uh-huh.
And using my doctor's testimony, as proof of my legitimate use.
Mm-hmm.
That was rejected by the judge, or?
The medical necessity defense was rejected. The doctor wasn't even allowed to give his testimony to the jury, nor was I.
Mm-hmm.
The word medicine was banned.
Wow.
Just one of my lawyers calls it silly. You know, I stand before the jury and I tell them, yes, I did. I did carry this marijuana in my vehicle, but I did it for innocent purposes.
But you can't use the M word, eh?
Pardon me?
You can't use the M word.
The M word was banned, right. Not marijuana in this case.
But medicine.
Uh-huh. And it is what I'm defining as spiritual and physical medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the spiritual medicine goes back eons in every country in the world, other than, officially speaking, Judaism and Christianity. It's the Puritan ethic at work imposing state morality on things associated with pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
But the word was banned. I told the jury I was innocent, but I can't tell you what my innocent purposes were.
Mm-hmm.
And I got one sentence out that gave them a clue, but it wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
I said that I believe I have a valid prescription for migraine headaches, and
mm-hmm.
that is that the doctor recommends it. A recommendation from a doctor is virtually like a prescription. It's like what you get when you go to a doctor for an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily have to write it out. They just prescribe it. They recommend it.
How long did the jury deliberate?
No, not long. 45 minutes or so.
And how long was the trial?
Several hours.
Mm-hmm.
Without, you know, most of the testimony that we would have put forward. I was virtually silenced. I couldn't think of anything else important to say,
mm-hmm.
and so I didn't prolong it.
Did you have an attorney?
No, I represented myself. I have for a long time because no one wants to do the constitutionality challenge. And I should say didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's changed as a result of this new federal appeals court case.
And this is the case that you're going to be using as the basis for your appeal, and hopefully will be the basis for staying your sentence today?
It's the basis for a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
Whether before judge or jury. The point is that I should have the right to give a religious defense in terms of reasons. I shouldn't be just outright denied that right.
Can you tell us a little something about the case which now allows you, I should say the law, but also the case, which I guess came up in the last month, or the last couple of weeks actually, that allows you to present a religious defense?
That's U.S. versus Bauer. It was a bunch of Rastafarians, many of whom were accused and convicted and given long sentences for smuggling and importing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But this fellow Bauer just possessed for his own use, and so he was excised out of the case, out of the conviction syndrome, and his conviction was reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he was using it for bona fide religious purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And his charge was possession. My charges are possession and transportation, but it really should apply still because it's, in both cases, it's for personal use, and, you know, the legislature did not intend to punish medical users when they passed these marijuana laws. And it's proven by the fact that they passed the Mello bill, and then the Marks bill, and then the Vasconcellos bill, the last two being vetoed by Wilson,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, reverse the trend, you know, of wrongly prosecuting certain people.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, before 1970, before Nixon outlawed marijuana as a medicine,
mm-hmm.
that you could, that the statute in California said except by prescription. You
really?
Would be prosecuted except if you had a valid prescription. That was changed to except as provided by law.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that I fit within the except as provided by law category. Both on religious and medical defense grounds.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Today is the challenge. I don't know if the judge will give me the opportunity, but if he doesn't, the appeals court very well might, at least in terms of being able to tell the judge what my religious beliefs are.
Now you've served time in jail before for fighting for the rights of those who need to use marijuana medically, yes?
Oh, it seems endless. In the 1990s alone, I've had 7 busts and was convicted in Sonoma County. Fought it for 2 years, and so I got a very light sentence after taking a plea in the middle of trial because the public defender betrayed me. And so I thought, I'm not going anywhere with this guy. It's hopeless. I'll just see what the appeal is.
That's a familiar story in many cases involving poor people or people who have independent defenses.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's pathetic. I mean, you know, the lawyers are costly, and I'm piss poor, and so my options are to either take a deal, in most cases, which I did both in Sonoma County and in Marin County,
mm-hmm.
And both of those cases are on appeal, making their way through the process. The Sonoma County already reached the U.S. Supreme Court on what they call a cert petition.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extraordinary remedy that you can use. You can go directly from the state Supreme Court to the U.S. Supreme Court, and then you can go all the way back through the federal courts back up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so my case was the first to hear the constitutionality questions regarding, you know, medicine. Is it unconstitutionally cruel, unreasonable, and unequal to punish medical use?
And that, in fact, is the case that came out of the trial that I was referring to earlier from, February of 1993?
From Marin?
From Marin.
Okay, now that, I didn't go to trial there either. I took a plea there and got rid of one of the two cases and felt that why not try a simple possession case on appeal?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much confidence in the lower courts. I don't mind going through the trial process, painful as it is, as I just did and as I will do in Humboldt next.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't win before these chicken shit judges at that level.
How is the local media treating your case here in Contra Costa County, which is what that's...
Well, they gave me a very good write-up. Woman hopes her case goes to pot, back when, you know, I was, presenting my motions and the constitutionality approach.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I spent 4 months in Marin on the six-month conviction. You do two-thirds time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was quickly shipped over to Contra Costa, where they slapped $150,000 bail on me. I never had more than $5,000 bail in 20 years.
You're going up in the world, Bevels.
Yeah. Maybe I hit the medium time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
but they're treating it like it's big time. The arsonist who, you know, torched four courthouses while I was in jail had $75,000 bail. Here I am held, you know, this nonviolent medical user on twice that.
And the judge's rationale for this bail was?
I don't get it. He said, you know, with people like you who have so many priors and keep doing what we tell you not to do, you know, we treat you in a certain way so that you will get it.
Now, is it true, Pebbles, that you have on occasion walked into court and actually shown the judge the marijuana you have with you, saying, this is my medicine, I keep it with me?
At all times, yes. And the Marin County judge just, the reporter who was commenting on that particular court scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, said that the judge ignored me and laughed at my jokes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I also told the probation officer that I have marijuana joints in my pocket right now, and that's the issue. She said, well, we could arrest you, no? And I said, but you won't.
And why don't they?
Well, it doesn't look good. At most, it would be a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And, they have other ways in which to get at me for my defiance,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, to continuously jail me and tie me up in court so that my life consists of virtually nothing else for years.
So how much time have you spent in jail now?
Well, not a great deal of time in jail, but if you count jail and courtrooms,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably nigh on a year in the recent period of time. I got an 8-month conviction in.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides.
So you were saying how long you've spent in jail. You spent at least a year.
And I'm Bathrob Spear Robert Norse, as I was saying. You're in the middle of an interview recorded several days before today with Pebbles Trippett, who's a marijuana activist who, as she was making this interview later in the day, was facing a possible sentence of 4 years for possession of 2 pounds of leaf marijuana, which is very low-grade marijuana, which she openly declared she used and always uses for her own medicine, and has been making that declaration for years. We're going to continue with this interview in a moment. First, a couple of brief announcements. On Tuesday, we've got lots of stuff coming up, and I want to announce this several times to kind of impress on the memories of you listeners how important it is. Tuesday is a very full day. It's both the City Council Day, and it's also the Board of Supervisors Day. Very beginning of the day at 8:15 in the morning at the City Manager's Office, which is right where the City Council members are all clustered in their offices, right next to the City Hall Council Chambers. In the City Manager's meeting room, there's going to be a meeting of the Social Services Subcommittee of City Council, Santa Cruz City Council. And that Social Services Subcommittee is concerned with Citizens Committee for the Homeless's $47,000 booty grab from last year's federal CDBG grant funds. You may remember that when we left off on this one, the fearless Squawk Box Scott Kennedy, council member, had dumped all this money into the Social Services Subcommittee so they could decide how and when CCH would get the money properly shielded from public view. Of course, it's not really shielded. You can come to this meeting if you wish. It is at 8:15 in the morning in the City Manager's Conference Room, which is right near the Mayor's Office. Just go to the Mayor's Office and you'll find it. And at this particular time, they're going to be discussing how much more money to throw at Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is the group, as you know if you've been following the show, that has destroyed the only campground, legal campground for the homeless in the country, and certainly the only legal place for homeless people to sleep outside in Santa Cruz, and are putting up instead a $1 million Trailers Not Trolls project, as I call it. They call it Community House. So they're getting $47,000, or thereabouts, for that on Monday, if Mike Rotkin and the subcommittee has its way. They've filed various papers and documents, and if you want to investigate this stuff, you can join me at a Huff meeting today. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We're activists who are kind of fighting back against this grab of homeless resources. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless acts in the name of the homeless. It's the monopoly service provider in the county as far as emergency shelter goes. They will run the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, they run the Winter Armory Program, and they run the homeless out of town when they feel like it, which is what they did last December. Anyway, Huff is going to try to fight this, as we have been doing for the last few months, by publicizing exactly what's going on. If you want to be a part of this educational and protest process, come to the Baglery, the main Baglery downtown, which is at, I think it's Maple and Cedar Streets. I believe that's right. Maple and Cedar, that's the Baglery. And we'll be meeting 15 minutes after the show ends at 12:15. You can join in our deliberations and our merry pranks. We're talking about Camp Quest, which will be the search for a legal campground, hopefully in as dramatic, colorful, and musical a fashion as we can. You may remember that Camp Quest originally was wandering around downtown, sampling various pieces of cement for their suitability, since the merchants seem to prefer dumping homeless people on the streets at Christmas to allowing them to stay in a completely usable campground out at River and Highway 1, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which is, of course, what Mayor Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did in mid-December in blatant violation of recorded promises made by Citizens Committee for the Homeless to the campers. And I continue to emphasize this because it really needs to be remembered. I think the homeless people here have a cause for legal action. They certainly have a cause for moral action. And since there is no open-air shelter, and on March 15th we are going to have hundreds more people flooding onto the streets from the Armory, or at least scores more. The Armory holds 100 to 150. It's a continuing crisis with a capital C, which the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did not spend one word discussing, as I understand it, at their board meeting yesterday. But perhaps you'll hear more about that from Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. Dan is now a radio commentator in his own right. He has his own show. He's a member of the River Street Refugees. He's the man who is almost single-handedly fighting the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And that's another thing that's going to be happening next Tuesday at City Hall. He is going to be appealing the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's permit to build its so-called trailer project, Community House, on the only spot of property which is currently available for homeless people to camp on. It's not available in the sense that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless will let people camp there, but it has been a traditional campground for the last decade. And the city and county have funded CCH and are continuing to throw money at CCH while they go deeper into debt and announce new fanciful million-dollar projects. It's a kind of an interesting situation. Interesting if you're in a house. Pathetic and enraging if you're in a tent or in a sleeping bag or under a bridge or in jail on a camping ticket, which some people are. I've seen the court calendars. Often these tickets go to warrant and you get picked up and you get taken to jail. And that's what happens in the fair city of Santa Cruz if you're homeless after 11 o'clock at night. Thank you, Citizens Committee for the Homeless. So anyway, Tuesday, let me briefly run this down to you. Tuesday at 8:15, come to the city manager's office for the Social Services Subcommittee, boy, that's a mouthful, meeting, headed by our fine mayor, Mike Rotkin. That's at 8:15 on February 27th, Tuesday. Then at 9 o'clock, should you be interested, you can come and watch the final nails hammered into the coffin of youth rights as the Board of Supervisors passes 3-2 the youth curfew, maybe even 4-1. Question whether Keeley will stand up and vote for the rights of the young is still unclear. Marty Wormhout probably will. This is a law that makes it illegal to tarry after 11 o'clock at night. We had Jessica Miller of the UCSC students coming down and talking to us about that. Hopefully she's listening, and if she wants to call in to comment on it, she of course can. Then at noon, we're going to... to talk you out of it, and they can also turn it into an inquiry, which is not under the jurisdiction of the Citizens Police Review Board, but is only under the jurisdiction of Internal Affairs in the Police Department. This is a coup by Chief Belcher, who's our police chief downtown and all around the town, and of course violates the whole spirit of the law which sets up the Citizens Police Review Board, and also is a rationalization and an attempt to justify the fact that the police department apparently has been dumping and deep-sixing complaints improperly in violation of their own previous general orders. So now they set up some new general orders, and they're not even talking about what they did last summer under their old general orders, nor is Police Review Board, the CPRB. If you want to be involved in this process, or at least hear what's going on, that is happening on Tuesday. That's on Tuesday, February 27th at noon to 2 in the library, the public library downtown, right across from City Hall where City Council meets. You can check out that whole process, see what's happening. If you want more information on that issue, you can, of course, give a call to the Citizens Police Review Board, which has hours 9 to 1 Monday through Thursday. So, unfortunately, they're not in today. Sorry about that. It's 429-3262, 429-3262. If you want to call the Citizens Police Review Board, file a complaint about any particular incidents of police misconduct that you either have suffered or witnessed here in Santa Cruz. Later in the day on Tuesday, there's going to be, of course, Dan Hopkins' appeal. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless and a done deal whipped right through the zoning board with its 10-trailer project, its $1 million, $200 to $600 per month, 45-person, actually now it's more of a 20 to 40-person project, which will displace 200 at the open-air shelter, what was the open-air shelter. That was passed several weeks ago. Dan Hopkins appealed that after panhandling for money to do so. I think it cost him $50. And he is going to argue his appeal, as I understand, the last item on the agenda of the February 27th evening session of City Council. And you can come down to the City Council and support Dan. That's right across from the public library, about 7:30. It'll probably be later than that, but if you want to be sure to be there, you can come then. You can speak on behalf of his appeal. And you can also speak at oral communications if you want to about any issues that concern you that aren't on the agenda. That's at 7 o'clock at the City Council, Tuesday, February 27th, next week. Well, as you can hear, my voice is history, and hopefully history will end when I get back on Monday and things will be better. This is a twice weekly show for those of you who are eager to hear it. It's 10 to 12 Mondays and Fridays, and you can be on the air on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. All you have to do is give me a call at 427-3772 while the show is on now, or you can call me at home, 423-HUFF.
the initials stand for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-4833. And of course, as I mentioned before, Huff meets today at the Baglery at 12:15. If you want to be a part of the process of fighting back against the criminalization of the homeless in public spaces, of demanding people have legal places to sleep, of fighting discrimination downtown, and some of that came up recently in the Metro. You may have followed the Metro last week. Had Scott Kennedy denouncing me in a lengthy letter, and a long-delayed letter from me talking about the Java House situation, which we really haven't gotten too much new information on. And if you have new information on what's been happening at the Java House, do call in, 427-3772. Until that happens, however, I'm going to play a bit more of Pebbles Trippett. And Pebbles, again, is the marijuana activist who was facing jail on Monday when she went to court in Martinez for medical marijuana use.
Period of time. I did, got an 8-month conviction in.
Bear with us. We will hopefully be over the hump on this tape in just a moment. These tapes get a little eccentric at times, and we just have to kind of nudge.
So you were saying how long you've spent in jail. You spent at least a year, almost a year,
well,
in jail on and off.
Literally have 5 months on 8-month conviction in Sonoma, 4 months on a 6-month conviction in Marin County, plus 2 more months in Contra Costa held on bail,
mm-hmm.
which will be subtracted from my sentence. I imagine in this case I'll get some amount of county jail plus the hard part, which is 3 years probation.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather just do the jail time.
You are going to accept the probation?
Well, hey, you know, each time I'm trying to do something new to see if anything will work,
mm-hmm.
and the defiance really didn't work except to get me a light sentence, light enough sentence as far as I'm concerned. And in this case, I have, I'm facing some hard time because this judge considers himself efficient, and I am such a repeat offender. I have a prior transportation, which this is. They know I have a transportation.
How much marijuana are we talking about here?
2 pounds of leaf,
mm-hmm.
low-grade leaf, which I've done for 20 years. Not bad normally. You know, it's, I know what class I'm in.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And it's as medicine, and you know, not to get quote-unquote recreationally high.
And you face how much again today? If
2 or 4 years. It's 2, 3, and 4 if you transport. It's 1, 2, and 3 if you sell. So it's more for transporting, even for personal use.
Do you have an attorney with you today, or are you going to be doing again
no,
solo
now
appearance?
No, for the first time because of this religious appeal issue, which, you know, the world has been waiting for. You know, I'm comparable to a Rastafari in my, you know, religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm not attached organizationally. So Tony Sarah's office assigned these three attorneys to take me all the way through the process, no matter how long and how far it goes.
So for the first time, you get some respect, eh?
it actually feels like that,
mm-hmm.
and some protection. I feel like, you know, the one person and the reporter who were in the courtroom during the trial, you know, let the judge have a carte blanche, and now that the courtroom will have, you know, I would say a dozen or two. Even though it's very far, we have rides going from the Cannabis Buyers Club area at 2 o'clock today, and then, you know, from the info shop later on, going through Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
at 3, and then a small rally on the steps. Plus, I think the press will be there again, and people are watching to see what this first test of this new U.S. versus Bauer Appeals Court case.
So you are getting some support this time from... actually, that was going to be my question. Are you getting support from organizations and from people like Dennis Perrone? Or
Dennis Perrone's very supportive.
Brownie Mary, you know.
Oh, yes. And Brownie Mary, they are. And the Buyers Club has helped with posters and signs, many of the people there. And Dennis has written, has, you know, spoken with the press and agreed to write a declaration of any kind about my lack of being a flight risk and danger to society and all those things they're going to try to keep accusing me of.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the will the Green Panthers in Washington D.C. are very supportive. And
how about Normal?
Normal is supportive in the sense that two attorneys associated with Normal have agreed to take my Marin County case that's now headed for the U.S. Supreme Court on a cert. I've already put in a petition,
mm-hmm.
and I have to be represented by attorneys then in that august body they don't let you represent yourself. So one of Lorena Bobbitt's attorneys, Lisa Kemmler and Zwirling, Attorney Zwirling in their office, have decided to take this case if I'm granted a petition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, also the current attorneys are at least normal supporters, if not normal identified. Normal hasn't done constitutional challenges, and I think it's been a problem,
uh-huh.
you know, for our community for all these decades, that this has been an underestimated approach. What they've done for 18 years is just try to get the scheduling, the DEA scheduling, changed
uh-huh.
from Schedule 2 to Schedule 1.
Uh-huh.
It's just restoring it to where it was before.
And they haven't been very successful, right?
Not yet. Even with a federal judge saying it should be. It was an administrative law judge who doesn't have as much power. Believe it or not, they have all these various sections.
Which judge was that?
That's Schedule 2, where we're trying to get it restored to.
Right, but which judge made that decision that it should be restored?
Francis Young, and mm-hmm. and he's dead now. He went to his grave with a very righteous decision, you know.
That was back in the 80s?
Let's see. 89 mm-hmm. is my memory.
That's my recollection of that, too.
And,
what about
if everyone did just one very righteous thing, which put forward the principles properly,
mm-hmm.
this world would be all different.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's what happened with the initial Mello bill and the subsequent bills that the California legislature put through. They say restore prescription access,
mm-hmm.
doctor-patient privacy. That's the issue, just like with abortion. And I say, if we can win doctor-patient privacy where harm is involved, as with a fraction of a person,
mm-hmm.
In the case of abortion, why can't we win it with medical marijuana where there's no harm?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have harmed no one, not even myself. And so that needs to be recognized as the standard for whether or not, you know, prosecutions should continue.
Mm-hmm.
The Sonoma County DA, who prosecuted me with a vengeance, you know, ran into me in the law library last year after I put my petition into the U.S. Supreme Court, and I showed it to him, and he said, "Well, good for you." I said, "What?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you say that the time you were prosecuting me?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I was my job, you know."
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Well, so how do you feel now?" And he said, "Who were you harming?"
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they don't understand. It's that they can't let their laws go so much is at stake, both nationally and internationally. The public has much at stake as well, which is to, you know, regain a society certainly not crime-free, but with such reduced crime, you know, if the drug were to end, starting with, let's say, marijuana, the easier drug, I think that we would find ourselves returning to a place that we came to know in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
you know, when marijuana was actually respected as a way to mellow out the masses. We didn't understand about medicine, but we understood about the sensations that we got.
Any support from magazines like High Times?
High Times published my Marin County article in this issue, the current, what is it, March issue, I guess.
So folks who want to read about you can buy High Times.
Yeah, exactly. Go into a store and just flip to the page, why am I in jail?
Tear out that page and walk out of the store.
You said it.
Mm-hmm. What about other political prisoners who have been fighting marijuana laws? Are you much in touch with them, either through correspondence or some other way?
There is a woman named Joan Bellow, a woman in her 60s who is an author of a book on marijuana and spirituality and medicine in general. And she has just been hauled away for, I don't know, some number of years, I think 8 years, just for not testifying against her husband. They were.
What state was this?
Pennsylvania is, I believe, where she actually got the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And she's tried to write me. The books she sent me, her books, which are legal, were sent back. And we've had a hard time connecting. This is how it is in this war,
mm-hmm.
because of the laws that keeps people invisible.
Mm-hmm.
But once the drug war casualties recognize that this is a war, the war at home, comparable to any war in Iraq, comparable to any war in Vietnam or any place else on earth.
Well, how can
so all pervasive and subtle that it's very hard for the millions that have been busted since the 60s, 10 million minimum is what we estimate, 1,000 a day, to meet their obligations to simply communicate with one another, then to move on one footing. And what my group and some other pro-per people like myself have done about this in order to give the lawyers the clue is filed a class action suit, a civil suit, in the same district court that Roe versus Wade started, based on the same principles, only much broader.
Violation of your rights of privacy?
Well, no, the doctor-patient privacy issue is certainly not home privacy. We're not raising that. We're just the higher, more compelling interest standard that's in this U.S. versus Bauer religious case. Is one of the issues. Then there's racial discrimination, ethnic discrimination, religious discrimination. There's the forfeiture laws. There's the mandatory minimums. There's the urine testing, all of the various invasions of one's body and one's privacy on those levels that are, you know, included. We have dozens, something like 38 different constitutional violations that we're up to by now. And what has happened with that, we filed last October, 100 of us, 100 plaintiffs in pro per. We got dismissed without prejudice, which is what we wanted, because of not showing up at status conferences, believe it or not. How can you show up to a status conference if you're in jail, like I was at the time? Well, you can't, and in fact, you don't need to. The lawyers just call in. And so we feel that we'll get this overturned on appeal and reinstated based on the judge. Judge Jensen, it was, wrongly.
He's a notorious judge.
He was in charge of that other war back in the 60s.
Yeah, he also has been more recently notorious for upholding the anti-homeless matrix laws of San Francisco.
Doing what to them?
Upholding them.
Yeah. Well, they may have, you know, put people like that on the difficult situations. They're supposed to do it randomly, of course, but I don't know how much they ever do is really random.
So how can people get information about these 38 constitutional issues, about your current struggle, about contacting other political prisoners around this issue? How can they get in touch with you? What's a good way to do that?
1800 Market, number 213, San Francisco, 94102. And it would be nice to get a dollar in the mail, and I could send a copy of the pamphlet. We published the text of the civil suit in pamphlet form, and, you know, we reduced it, made the print small. And they can also call 415-824-4214 for now. If I'm taken to jail today, as opposed to, you know, bail or a stay, I could get a stay on the sentence even if I am sentenced to jail or prison for a few weeks, then they can still speak with Tom Osher about various things that we'll be doing under a new group that we formed called Friends of Mary Jane Alliance for Drug War Prisoners. This is exciting because in Europe, just last week, I got the word from Dr. Beresford, who is our treasurer, and he is taking a slideshow from prisoners, mostly LSD prisoners and other very long-term, you know, convictions, 10, 20, 30 years, to Europe, because he was invited to be the keynote speaker in this very high-level debate at the University of London that's taking place around mandatory minimums. The parliament there is trying to pass the mandatory minimums and be like the Americans. Let's copy the Americans. They've got it down, you know, about how to harshly oppress people.
They're so successful, too.
Well, we say, and even the police chiefs say, the war has failed. And that's not a measure of success. Every war eventually ends. Prohibition of alcohol eventually ended. This war will end also. The sooner we rise up together based on our common bonds and decide that it's worth restoring our civil rights and freedom, you know, to ourselves and to the American people.
Again, repeat your number and address for those who want to send you either financial support or good information or just send you some words of encouragement.
Okay, you know, the financial support, even a dollar or $5 while you're in jail, or even if you're not in jail, if you're just preparing to go to jail, is double or triple what it would be on the outside. And it's more important to not spend every single dime on yourself, I feel, in this world where we're all in this together. I think it's better just to share some with the most down and out and with the ones who will use it wisely. I feel that I do. It almost all goes to stamps and networking and so on. So people can, you know, for the time being, contact us at 415-824-4214 and 1800 Market, number 213, San Francisco, 94102. There's also Box 1838 in Mendocino,
95460.
That's the base, the northern base of the class action suit.
Hang on a second. Go ahead.
Okay. Despite the difficulties in prisoners being in touch with one another and with the outside world, in Marin County, we formed a group called Sisters in Stir.
Mm-hmm.
And people can, you know, who know others who are locked up or who are about to be locked up and need help can, you know, contact that group through the 1800 Market Street address.
Now, indeed, the 1800 Market Street address isn't that the Compassionate Cannabis Club Users group?
No, that's another. They're downtown market, and this is a box that I'm...
Oh, okay, right. I'm confused about the Market Street situation.
Yeah.
But you have been getting support from them?
Yes, very definite support. You know, I feel that... The initiatives that we have been trying to get on the ballot for 20 years and have failed with one exception, and the one that's circulating now may prove to be just another, you know, effort that didn't quite make it.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the medical marijuana initiative statewide?
Yes, because of the winter and because of the, you know, attempting volunteer signatures and those two factors.
Can you clarify what those are again?
Getting signatures without pay is all I mean.
Oh, I see.
Because
it's real hard to do.
It's not a volunteer world anymore. It's you can get a third or something like that, but you don't come close. You just need to face the music about how difficult our struggle is, and I feel that we need to try all these avenues. And I certainly, you know, as a longtime initiative coordinator in San Francisco, support the effort. But I know what the statewide attempt is facing, and I see the handwriting on the wall. I think it, you know, would be wise to come back in an odd year election, 1988, when the politicians are not the focus, but rather the issues. It's an illusion and a myth that it helps to be in a busy election, and especially with our issue, which, you know, gets the spectrum from conservative to progressive everywhere you try it. Idaho Supreme Court passed the right to use a medical necessity defense. How far behind Idaho can California be?
Pretty far, it looks like, at the moment.
Well, this Bauer case broke.
It's true, but that's a federal case, right?
Well, yes, but it's the federal cases that are the best cases. Roe versus Wade and all the others apply to the states.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And we're much more likely to get federal cases that binds the states. The courts can't say that the federal law doesn't bind us.
Right, but I just, when you're asking about California, I think of the Wilson vetoes, and I think of the Supreme Court here, which is, you know.
The Supreme Court is perhaps virtually hopeless.
Yep.
The Wilson is too. But really, when you get down to it, the DEA, that cop, not a doctor, physician, or any, you know, recognized authority, but the cop in charge of that, whose boss is Janet Reno, whose boss is Clinton, is really our problem. It doesn't matter who the president is. It's the DEA in charge of our medicine and telling doctors what to do, how to practice their profession, and putting patients in jail and prison. Endlessly. I mean, there's never going to be an end to it until we get that scheduling changed. But I don't myself feel...
You're referring, of course, to the fact that marijuana is on a... The federal government has a series of so-called schedules which rate the viciousness or usefulness of certain drugs, and marijuana is on the worst possible schedule, right?
Yes, exactly. It's in one which says no medical purposes, along with LSD and heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Morphine... A derivative of heroin is in Schedule 2. Cocaine is in Schedule 2. We're just asking to be equal to those two.
Mm-hmm.
to be equal to morphine and cocaine.
Have you gotten any reports from countries where marijuana has been partially legalized, like in Colombia or Germany?
Yeah, a lot is happening around the world, and that means it's due to break here soon, too, I think. In Italy, the legislature, is it called, I believe, legalized personal use of drugs, period.
When was this?
My understanding is that it was last year.
Hmm.
I haven't seen it because the press is so sold out here.
Mm-hmm.
Even the alternative press doesn't cover this kind of thing.
It's interesting. Where did you hear about it?
Through the grapevine, or maybe I got a call about it from a New York Times article or something.
Huh. Okay.
But I was never able to track it down. The German Supreme Court decision, I haven't seen that either, except in German. And that's a recent decision. That
High Times featured an article on the German situation, I guess, last summer, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And the Colombian situation, I think, has been in the papers kind of sporadically.
And I think that was the president, and that's part of why he's in trouble, that he declared that marijuana, personal use marijuana legalization, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So the president in Colombia, the legislature in Italy, and the Supreme Court in Germany, that covers most bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it just... what is going to happen here? I think a constitutionality challenge is likely to get a good decision, judging by this recent U.S. versus Bauer case, as any other approach, and it affects the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
If you win in the appeals court, the federal appeals court, which brought down this U.S. versus Bauer case, seven states. You win in the U.S. Supreme Court, okay, that's all the states. Why do we need to go county by county, state
right.
by state?
If you can get Rehnquist and his boys to agree with you.
On medical marijuana and on compelling interest regarding religion, they won't disagree. The conservatives are sometimes more principled than the liberals because they're further from, the taint.
I think actually the Religious Restoration Act that you're talking about was an act in the Congress that was passed in order to overturn the Supreme Court decision that restricted religious rights. So I'm less sanguine about this than you are.
The state Supreme Court, though. The Oregon State Supreme Court is what they overturned, not the U.S. Supreme
Court. Oh, is that correct?
Yeah, so
okay.
It was the U.S. Supreme Court that
hadn't ruled on the case.
On exactly, and still hasn't. But the Federal Appeals Court is directly under the U.S. Supreme Court. It's so close, and it is binding on all courts.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we really need better for is my feeling. Let's start with what we've got. All they're saying is that we are hereby restoring the compelling interest standard that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993 put into statute form by Congress.
In other words, a state cannot restrict your use of marijuana or other herbs for religious purposes unless there is a compelling state interest.
And yes, and they have to state it and prove it. In other words, the burden of proof is on them. That's why they were wrong in my case.
Mm-hmm.
They put the burden of proof on me, and then all they did was deny me when I tried to give them my approach to religion and my reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm not part of an organized religion, there's nothing in the RFRA that says I have to be.
We're back on tape again. Go ahead, Pebbles.
What excites me about this very fascinating subject of psychoactive plants, whose day I believe is coming, is that we're aligned with cultures the world over, because the world's cultures have had at their center sacramental use of marijuana, ganja.
Mm-hmm.
In all the religions that you can name in the world, with the exception of the official position from Christianity and Judaism, Dan Lundgren, the Attorney General, took his oath of office in the name of the Judeo-Christian ethic. And he's not supposed to do that.
Mm.
And that's not separation of state. So we're going to use that in our civil suit to show that indeed he is upholding this Puritan ethic against the use of these psychoactive drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's not allowed to do that. He can do it in the name of public safety, public health, but not in the name of religion. And so we're going to hope to turn the federal courtrooms into teach-ins about all of these issues concerning the war on drugs, present rational testimony, compelling and compassionate testimony from everyone affected, everyone who's been harmed by the drug war, the drug laws in any way, and get the press that the teach-ins during the Vietnam era got, we hope, with, you know, an outcome, something, outcome very similar. That is, that the people win when they persist.
Mm-hmm.
And they take, what took us 10 years to stop the war in Vietnam, we've been at this since, we're dating it back to 1970, because Nixon's Republican Party platform in 1968 called for the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the modern day beginning of it, when the first act was to put marijuana in Schedule 1 from Schedule 2, making it unavailable as a medicine, in other words, blocking access.
Mm-hmm.
The second was to paraquat Mexico, blocking access,
mm-hmm.
another way. And, you know, it's escalated since then to the point where people don't even know the meaning of privacy and lack of fear. Prohibition doesn't work. It organizes crime. Effectively organizes crime. It doesn't prevent crime. And so I feel that once the public gets a well-rounded view through the class action suit or through any individual case, you know, any others could come along and do just the same thing, more or less. All they have to do is present a motion for either a medical necessity defense and or a religious use defense and get it denied. And then they've got lawyers that they didn't have before also taking them forward to see if they fit within the confines of that case.
We have an appeal down here. Actually, the case happened last week, the Robbie Berlin case. I don't know if you know about Robbie Berlin. He was, he was just a grower, a fellow who grew 58 plants, who his defense was it was for his own personal use as well as for the use of other individuals who had need for marijuana medically. And he was going to try a medical necessity defense here in the Santa Cruz courts, in the court of Judge Kelsey. And it's interesting, many jurors kept standing up saying, I cannot serve on this jury because I could not convict this person if they. I was told he couldn't do a medical marijuana defense, or even if, you know, even if all, if a necessity defense was not strictly proven, because as you know, a necessity defense is a difficult defense
sure.
to prove. Requires six items of very specific, immediate showing that there's a need to break the law in order to prevent a greater evil.
That's right.
And to show that on a regular basis is a much harder thing than to show it, let's say, in an emergency instance where,
yeah.
you know, like you're saving someone from a, you're trespassing to save a child from a burning building or something like that.
Well, that's how it's being interpreted. I really think if you look at it historically, though, that it should be looked at as a balance of harms
mm-hmm.
as opposed to some, in other words, you take every situation, any normal or ordinary situation, as well as extraordinary situations, and you just balance society's harm against, you know, the supposed harm that's being done by the breaking of the drug law, for instance. And, you know, that's why I think the standard is that's being used is wrong.
Well, the positive thing we saw about the Berlin trial, he was not allowed to present a necessity defense because they showed that he had $7,000, and they wondered, you know, and he admitted that he used this money for his own personal sustenance, claiming that, you know, how else could he proceed? Others claimed he wasn't wise in making that testimony. Should have said instead he pumped it back into the medical marijuana stuff. He also had some fallings out with the local medical marijuana group, and there were, you know, those, some said he was stoned at the trial, but who wouldn't be after a while?
I wouldn't begrudge it myself, but it might be his last chance for a while.
Yeah, he's still at liberty, and he's appealing. I don't know if he's using the case that you're using as the basis for that appeal.
Did he present a religious use defense?
He didn't present a religious use defense.
You can't. If you don't raise it below, you can't. That's why I raised it. I knew I would be denied, but I thought it might be needed someday.
It's possible, actually, that he did when I wasn't in the courtroom, but I didn't hear that.
Well, you know, I'm defining medicine as spiritual and physical medicine, and so any medical defense then includes both the religious and the doctor-patient privacy issues,
mm-hmm.
if it's defined that way. And it seems to me that we should not say a religious use defense depends on someone being part of an organized group.
Although that's often, I fear that's going to be what they're going to do to
that
try
they're
to
gonna do it, but then they,
to stop you from doing
they're
that.
They're ripe for a discrimination charge.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to discriminate against one who is a pantheist like myself
mm-hmm.
and a nature worshiper and favor, you know, Christians. Or, you know, sure. Because they're in a big church. In fact, that's one of our arguments.
But it did take, what, 75 years to get the CO status expanded to those who were not just members of established peace churches, for example.
Well, that this is pretty much a new thing on religious grounds, though. The peyote case, the Native American church has now been given the right, based on RFRA, to use peyote religiously as a sacrament. And so the Peyote Way Church is coming forward and saying, hey, why not us too? That's discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly it is. We come forward and we say, hey, what about marijuana users? It's our sacrament as well. It's been used by religions the world over from the beginning of time. Millions of people for thousands of years. In India, it's not illegal. Basically, people don't do time for it because it's so deeply embedded in the religious use of the people. And Hinduism is a very tolerant religion, and most of the people, as I understand it, recognize it as a religious center of their life.
So, will Dr. Todd Mikaria be at your sentencing hearing today, testifying on your behalf?
Yes. Yes, he will. This time he'll be able to because he doesn't have to speak to the jury.
Mm-hmm.
It'll work to speak to the judge. They're more lenient.
How about Dr. Tom Peters?
No, because he's Marin County.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like really it was basically covered by Dr. Mikaria and by the lawyers and by... Arlo Smith will be there as a co-worker and friend and a couple of other co-workers and friends.
By the time we're broadcasting, of course, this will have already happened, so I can't really successfully invite people to come to the hearing. I can only wish you the best of luck. I'd like to... weren't raining so hard, and my car were in better shape. I might be coming up myself, but we're kind of out of the loop down here in Santa Cruz.
Pretty much there in spirit always. You're fighting your own battles all the time.
Oh, well, thank you. And I
appreciate very much this high-level discussion. I hope we can have more.
Definitely. I think you've got a lot to say. In fact, I invite you to call back with at least a brief update, and I would like to have a longer one. If you want to do a series of reports on... not just your struggle, but related struggles, I'd be happy to broadcast them.
Oh, sure. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Give me a call back at 408-423-4833. And since you are poor, we're all poor these days, but I'd be happy to try to reach you myself. Just leave a message and I'll get back to you. Or
okay.
Leave us...
I take on the expenses usually. It's just that right now I'm leaving without... I have some fear that I'll be remanded today and I'm not ready at all. If I have another month or 6 weeks, I can tie some...
Well, have Tom call us if you're remanded.
Okay.
And give us a report on what's happening in the courtroom.
Uh-huh.
And then also have him call your address so you can be reached in jail.
All right.
And so we can put that out on the air, and we'll append that to this report.
Okay. I sure will do that, and I appreciate you a lot.
Thank you, Pebbles Trippett.
Bye-bye, Robert. No,
bye-bye.
From out of ye earth firsters, and hear this tale I'll tell, how the timber barons would turn this land to hell. Now which side are you on? Which side are you on? You're either an earth firster or paid off by LP. Now which side are you on? 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 Don't slay for Harry Murlaw, don't listen to the rapist lies, but the wilderness ain't got a chance unless we mobilize. Now which side are you on? Which side are you on?
And you're on the air with Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call in 427-3772 if you want to talk to me about anything you've been hearing on the air. We've just listened to an interview with Pebbles Trippett from earlier this week, and we'll be giving you the denouement, what happened at her trial, in just a moment. And you've also heard a song by Daryl Cherney, Which Side Are You On, from his album Timber.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good spokesman that Pebbles Trippett was.
Ah, that sounds like Bob LaMonica.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
All right, Bob, how are you doing?
Well, good. You know, there's been percolating information about the possibility of a smoke-in here in Santa Cruz, either on the day or the day before Robbie Berlin's sentencing, which is on March 20th.
And of course, Robbie Berlin is the man who Judge Kelsey refused to allow a medical marijuana necessity defense for, and he was, he was found guilty, or he pleaded no contest when the jury, who I guess I was mentioning that in the interview with Pebbles, that a lot of jurors almost excused themselves instead of instead of keeping a low profile and voting not guilty. They said, we're going to have to vote not guilty, so in the interest of justice, we exclude ourselves. But Robbie is facing some hard time here.
Well, it's helped to raise the issue of the grower significantly. It's sad that it's an individual's life that's at stake, who could be incarcerated for up to 3.5 years. It might not be that severe. It could be quite light. But I think the time is right now for bold action. You know, the 90s are hopeful in many ways, and Santa Cruz is certainly a hopeful place. And it's time for a smoke-in, which is to say a public solidarity action, a public direct action. It's happened already in Madison, Wisconsin, and Ann Arbor, and it's high time that Santa Cruz had a smoke-in.
Indeed, I think every week in the last couple years they would have smoke-ins at McHenry Library and UCSC. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, that was a regular occurrence, at least in the early 90s up there. And it was very ostentatiously ignored by the university police.
Behind the library.
I'm not sure exactly where it happened. I heard about it, but I never got to it.
Yeah. This would be, you know, the idea here, and like I said, it's been percolating up for months, and it's likely to come together because the energies seem to be coming together. And it's time for a bold action, time for a demonstration to raise the consciousness. A lot of people, for whatever reasons, enjoy and use marijuana and see the incredible potential that is there economically for this product.
Mm-hmm.
It's high time that we dealt with it rather than being suppressed and oppressed.
So okay. Robbie's hearing is going to be coming up on March 20th?
March 20th.
Do we know the time on that? Or?
No, I don't. You know, here's the deal, too, and like I said, Pebbles Trippett was very articulate, because a lot of what happens in bureaucracies, in law enforcement bureaucracies, in prosecutorial bureaucracies, is that they deny their role. They like being disempowered because they have no accountability. It's really by definition cowardice when somebody says, it's my job, I'm just following orders. And when you take someone with the capabilities of a lawyer who will advocate yay or nay for a cause without integrity, it's got to be the height of hypocrisy.
Oh, yeah.
And how quickly we forget the lives that were destroyed in the beer keg smashing days, but also the bureaucracies that grew large during those same days that became career preservation grant acquiring beasts. So that's what's being challenged here.
Well, I think what we're going to be playing now, Bob, is the kind of a follow-up a day later, so I can tell you and the rest of the audience what happened in that courtroom when Pebbles went back and her doctors testified in her behalf.
So just to let it hit another level, the day or before Robbie Berlin's sentencing on March 20th, there is likely to be a public smoke-in here in Santa Cruz for those that want to participate.
And will you be supplying the marijuana, Bob?
I'll be supplying my presence. I certainly support this effort all the way.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it didn't come from me, but I certainly would be proud and honored to be a part of it.
And I would support it as well.
You bet. All right.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Thanks for letting me get on.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And I hope you will support that upcoming smoke-in if it happens on March 20th when Robbie Berlin is sentenced. Another incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning, Robert. This is Cosmo.
Oh, hi, Cosmo.
Hey, how are you doing?
All right. Have you been listening to the show?
Yes, I have.
What do you think?
I think Pebbles is actually an excellent advocate. She speaks eloquently and lucidly about what's going on. I very much pity her position. I sitting here listening, I have a couple of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think it's relevant that March 20th, and it kind of fits in, Pebbles being a pagan would know this, that March 20th is the vernal equinox.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's traditionally way back before we can even remember sort of, well, maybe not. There was some science involved, but that is a big smoke festival day.
Hey. All you growers take note.
The other thing that I've been sort of juggling in my mind is what the effectiveness might be if on a large scale, and I don't know how many listeners are listening to Free Radio, but on a large scale, I used to have the idea that, pardon me.
Mm-hmm. Too much of that good, kind buzz?
No, not, my lungs are killing me.
Uh-huh.
From need, but that maybe a large campaign to, like, maybe mail a leaf to some of the higher-ups,
mm-hmm.
You know, get the names out of the phone books, or the corporate heads that maybe don't even know what marijuana is like, and send them off a leaf or a J or something, so they can experience for themselves if they haven't, although I think they have other sources.
Mm-hmm.
And another way, I think that it might be kind of unacceptable, but to get a message around, instead of writing on the walls and stuff, why not write on money? It circulates all over the place.
Oh, yeah, we did that during the Iraqi war.
Yeah, you know, it's strange, though. I mean, they printed up all these brand-new bills. I don't see any of... Maybe they just call those out automatically.
I think the banks do.
Yeah, so...
And there used to be a stamp that people would stamp on, you know, $1 bills, George Washington, I grew hemp.
Right, it was his birthday.